This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
A man dressed in drag was attacked by two men outside of the Clinton Street Theater on Sunday in an apparent hate crime. The victim, 53-year-old Carlos Cervantes, had attended the weekly midnight showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Cervantes was dressed as one of the characters from Rocky Horror. Two men confronted Cervantes outside the theater, shouting slurs at him. Cervantes attempted to walk away but was thrown to the ground on 26th Avenue. One of the men kicked Cervantes in the head several times before witnesses pulled him away. Cervantes was not seriously injured but has suffered a number of bruises. No subject description is available of the attacker.
For the first time in a decade, the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a case that could have a major impact on gay rights in the United States. The case before the justices today will examine the fundamental question of whether the U.S. Constitution allows people to marry whoever they want, regardless of gender. Today's 80-minute argument was the first in what is expected to last several days. Supporters of gay marriage are hoping for a court ruling that will declare all state and federal laws banning gay marriage unconstitutional. A lawyer representing opponents of gay marriage argued in favor of keeping the ban because it aligns with the will of the people. According to the Associated Press, the High Court expressed doubts in response to arguments presented on both sides of the case. Justice Anthony Kennedy suggested that the court could refrain from issuing a ruling on the case altogether. Such a scenario would pave the way for gay marriage in California while all other states would maintain a status quo. A ruling in the case is not expected until June. Meanwhile, rallies are underway all across the country in support of gay marriage. For more on the rallies happening right now in Oregon, KBOO's Rebecca Ney spoke with Amy Ruiz, Communications Director for Basic Rights Oregon.
Amy, what is the primary objective of the rallies happening across Oregon right now?
Well, the rallies happening in Oregon tonight are part of rallies happening in all 50 states across the country. It's a chance for people to really demonstrate their support for the freedom to marry for all loving and caring and committed couples, including those in Oregon.
Can you share with our listeners some of your expectations regarding this Supreme Court case?
You know, it's hard to say what the Supreme Court is going to decide. We really won't know until June, so it'll be hard to say until then what the impact will be in Oregon. Right now, we are operating under the assumption that we will need to carry forth with our efforts to bring a measure to the voters in November 2014 to make marriage legal in Oregon.
For listeners that might want to head down and join these rallies as we are talking right now, where are these rallies located?
Sure. So we are in front of the Mark Hatfield Federal Courthouse in downtown Portland. That's at Southwest 3rd and Salmon. We've got hundreds of people showing up tonight to hear from our Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum and other special guests. If you happen to be listening online and you're in Eugene, we're at the Federal Building in Eugene downtown.
Amy Ruiz, Communications Director with Basic Rights Oregon. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
This is Rebecca Ney with KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Jimmy and Lynn to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
It is so easy to support KBOO Community Radio.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, because we know it's true, Jimmy. That's why. You just dial 877-500-5266 and let our lovely phone volunteers, who are really good at what they do, just guide you through it really fast. And then you can go on with your evening and your life and feel good about yourself.
Ooh, and sometimes you don't even have to pick up the phone and call. You can just go on the internet at kboo.fm, and there's a little tip jar on the front homepage for KBOO.
Donate now, it says.
That's right. But if you do call, we've got multiple options for you to be able to pay. We're pretty easy, as long as you're joining with us to continue to bring you this radio, this compelling information, whether it's news, public affairs, even the music is compelling, man.
Totally.
I mean, it's all over the place. There, you name a music genre, and we're covering it over here at KBOO.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just call 877-500-5266. Another thing you can do when you become a member, you get to vote for the board of directors. So listen to the radio, join our merry band, and vote. Be a stakeholder in KBOO. It's something that you can, it's a community thing. It's something that you can be proud of in your community. Folks know about us all over the world because of KBOO.FM. since the internet. It's we're well respected, and it's time for you to contribute to help keep our energy flowing. Money is energy. Help keep our station well, not just surviving but thriving. And that's something that you can do by becoming a member at KABU at 877-500-5266.
The catchword is dynamic, and what that means for you, dear listener, is that it's not just a one-way proposition around here. We're asking for you to be part of this. You like what you listen to, you like what you hear, join us in keeping this afloat, keeping this happening. We're part of the community here in Portland. We're part of a West Coast community. We're part of a community of smaller community radio stations that are popping up that KABU has had something to do with getting them started, and it's all because people just like you have decided, I've been listening, I've been enjoying, I've been informed. Now it's time for me to step up my game, get on the phone, and dial 877-500-5266. That is a toll-free number, and we will make it easy for you to be part of this dynamic community down here, bringing you news, information, public affairs, and occasionally even a personality will spark up there, and you'll get to know some of us better just by what we are bringing to you on the air. And we've even got some gifts to offer you, so do it now. That number again, 877-500-5266.
There's no time like the present.
A fundraiser raffle for a little league in St. Helens, Oregon had a controversial prize, an AR-15 rifle. Now some parents want the entire board of the Little League removed, calling the fundraiser inappropriate. Two players have also threatened to leave the league, and one has quit already. A public meeting to discuss the raffle is scheduled for later this week. The winner of the raffle plans to use the gun for varmint hunting. The raffle raised $1,600, and a similar rifle is being planned by a Little League in Illinois.
Five small airports in Oregon are facing closure of their air traffic control towers due to automatic spending cuts to the Federal Aviation Administration. The mandated government cuts or sequestration went into effect on March 1st. The Oregon airports threatened with closure are in Klamath Falls, North Bend, Pendleton, Troutdale, and Salem. The FAA is planning on closing 170 small airports with low traffic and control towers staffed by contractors. The closures will make up $600 million worth of budget cuts. Most of the Oregon airports will argue against tower closures by citing regular Air National Guard use of their facilities. The Portland-Troutdale Airport has stated it will argue against its closure by citing how close the airport is to Portland International Airport.
Work has shut down at the port of Tacoma, Washington on Monday after an industrial accident caused the death of a longshoreman at a port terminal. This is the second such death in less than 2 weeks at the Tacoma port, following another accident on March 12th. Details of the incident have not yet been released, but officials say the accident occurred around 8 a.m. on Monday morning. The port was shut down today in accordance with the practices of the Longshoremen's Union, which suspends operations for 24 hours after the death of a fellow worker. The port was scheduled to open on Tuesday morning.
On Friday, Walmart filed a lawsuit against a major workers' union and others who have protested at its Florida stores. This is the retail giant's latest attempt to end what it sees as disruptive rallies in and around its stores. Walmart has no union-represented workers here in the U.S., but has a long history of opposition from various labor groups. The United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, otherwise known as the UFCW, is listed as the main defendant in the lawsuit. Also listed in the suit is a small but vocal group of current and former Walmart employees recognized as the Organization United for Respect at Walmart, also known as Our Walmart. Dan Fogelman, Walmart spokesman, commented that the lawsuit was filed, quote, to help protect our customers and associates from disruptive rallies and illegal trespassing. The defendants are accused of violating Florida law by trespassing on Walmart grounds over the last 8 months. Walmart is asking the court for a legal ruling that would prevent future trespassing. Defendants, however, charge that the world's largest retailer is trying to muzzle its critics. For more on this story, KABU's Natalie Fuller spoke with Bob Marshall, an organizer with Making Change at Walmart here in Oregon, and also a member of Our Walmart.
What reaction did you have to Florida's filed lawsuit?
The reaction I had was that they'd rather spend money suing groups like Jobs with Justice and Walmart workers and community groups to try to stop the movement to expose their behavior than to make things better for workers. That's kind of what struck me, that this lawsuit is sort of a local thing to scare people to not demonstrate in front of Walmart about their predatory business practices.
Would that affect us here in Oregon at all?
No, I imagine something like that might happen in the future as the movement expands. At the present time here in Oregon, making change at Walmart, it is the corporate accountability side. In other words, do you want this store in your neighborhood? How are they behaving? And the other side is the Our Walmart, which is workers organizing, acting in concert. Both of those are pretty much just getting started as of 4 or 5 months ago. So we're a bit behind the curve in the nationwide effort. For instance, there weren't any Walmart workers that went on strike last holiday season and Black Friday and so forth. But that's going to change because the movement to expose Walmart's behavior with workers and the community is building here in Oregon. And there's a tremendous Jobs and Justice chapter, several of them around the state that we are working with. There'll be big things happening in 2013, I hope, as a community to support Walmart workers and Walmart workers themselves start organizing.
Could you speak more on the 12 planned and or rumored Walmarts for our Oregon area?
Well, just in the Portland area, I don't have a handle right now on how many new stores will be statewide, but as of about a year ago, I guess, Walmart announced that they were going to open 17 new stores in the Gresham, Portland, Vancouver, Beaverton, Tigard area, the whole metro area. So the question I think that's facing our community is, how many Walmarts do we need? When the Walmart business practice is to privatize the profit and socialize the cost. One example of that would be here in Oregon. Several years ago, there was a study by the legislature and one of the accounting offices that found that Walmart employees received the highest amount of food assistance and medical care assistance in the state of Oregon, paid for by the Oregon taxpayers. Now, this is not a condemnation of the Walmart workers themselves. They are struggling in a corporate economy that has failed them to find a job and feed their families. That is not good for Oregon taxpayers or any way to run a community, letting these companies privatize profits and socialize the cost. And what they do is they spread around a few million dollars in charity, put some ads on TV, and they look like the organic, wonderful company that's come to help you, but they take more than they give.
That was Bob Marshall, an organizer with Making Change at Walmart, speaking with KBOO's Natalie Fuller about Walmart's lawsuit against protesters in Florida and the company's expansion plans in Oregon.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now, it's your turn. Joining us now are Jimmy and Lynn to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
It is the easiest thing you will ever do. You just dial 877-500-5266 and you talk to our wonderful phone volunteers and they will guide you through membership. You could, for a $90 minimum donation, you can have our new T-shirt. It's called That Shirt, and it's called Commie Pinko Freaks. KBOO is not just for Commie Pinko Freaks, self-righteous gutter punks, drug-addled peaceniks, anarcho-syndicalist, hippie, tree-huggers, gay hillbillies, militant vegans, Jerry, J-E-R-R-R-Y, at-trick deadheads, or foil hat brigade anymore. And it never was. But that's the joke. Okay.
That's right. It's not just for the above mentioned anymore. It's also for you. Join
you listening out there. You are listening right now. It's time to call.
That's right. Join the Foil Hat Brigade. Become a proud member by calling 877-5-
I love a good foil hat.
877-500-5266. You know, they're talking about just a minute ago about how Walmart, through their business model, likes to
talk about gaming the system.
That's right. They're socializing the costs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's what we're doing here. We socialize the benefit and we socialize the cost. And that's why we're coming here today to talk to you and ask you out there, listeners, it's time for you to get active. It's time for you to be part in resisting the socialization of costs, the continued lumping on your back of, you know, the price of the way that certain corporations want to do business in town because they realize that they can maximize their profits by making you pay for it. Well, join us in resisting that. We stand against those type of things because it's not good for our community. We realize that. It's a no-brainer here for us. But in order to be able to do that, that's right, we have to have you on our team. We need to know that you're not just out there listening. We need to know that you care, dear listener. So do it now. Join us. That number, 877-500-5266, or on the web, it's at kboo.fm. It's super easy, and it matters.
It absolutely does. And, you know, we have restaurants that care and participate and help feed our hungry volunteers. And today we'd like to thank Bread and Ink Cafe at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, Voodoo Donuts at 5101 Northeast David Street, Produce Row at 204 Southeast Oak Street, and Dove Vivi, 2727 Northeast Gleason Street. Thank you so much, restaurants. And thank you, people who are going to be calling in soon. You are. We've got a $250 goal, very modest goal for this program, and we would like you, yes, you, to help participate, to be a participant in your community radio station, and call in right now with your donation. 877-500-5266. If you like news and you're listening to the news, we've got for a $120 minimum dollar donation, that's what is that
30,
per day?
35
is that
30, cents.
35 cents per day. You can get this really great 4-gig audio flash hard drive with exclusive KBOO content on it. We've got everyone from Noam Chomsky, Derek Jensen, Joshua Foer, Amy Goodman, Winona LaDuke, all sorts of KBOO-hosted specials, Occupy Portland, and so much more. It's all inside this little teeny 4-gig audio flash hard drive. And that can be yours, as well as knowing that you are part of this amazing institution. You have participated in your local community radio station. We are the farmers market of radio. We have many, many things here to offer. So I know you all like farmers markets in Portland, and everybody here loves to participate in the community. This is a great way to do it. It's an important way to do it. Call 877-500-5266.
And I got to own it. My math was even off there, Lynn. It's not 35 cents. It's 33 cents a day. That's like way less than a postage
stamp. Way, way less. Way less. And it's just per day. You know, it's a fraction of a latte.
A fraction of a latte.
A veritable fraction of a latte to do that.
It's less than a postage stamp.
For heaven's sake.
That's right. So that we can send you this information and keep you informed, because I got to tell you, you know it's true. That's why you're listening here right now. And let's just honor the fact that the other mainstream media, is that the term that they like to use?
Conglomerated media. Conglomerations.
That's right.
Then they all, you know, have the same news and pretty much the same things going on. They're just catching on to the fact that drones are happening, and we've been reporting that for, I don't know, years?
We've been hitting that up heavy.
Yeah.
And we just had John Stauber in town, and we broadcast his talk live, part of the Illihi Lecture Series, Who Owns the Media, talking about those conglomerates right there, keeping you distracted and worried about issues that, you know, sure, let's be honest. The stuff that you read in the news, it's going to have your interest, and, you know, there is going to be stuff in there that you can sift through and you can find facts that really matter. But when you tune in to 90.7 KBOO, you're getting it distilled down. You're getting cut to the quick, because this is volunteer produced. We're doing this because we love doing this. Nobody's getting a paycheck around here to bring you this kind of programming. We're doing this because we know it's important. And I'm doing this, and Lynn's doing this, and our phone volunteers are doing this right now, because we need you to acknowledge how important it is. Make those phones ring, folks. It's really easy. We even have a toll-free number for you. It's 877-500-5266.
You know, you can also come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We love for people to come in and pay in person. Come in and see where your money's going. It's until 7 o'clock anyway. The doors are open. Come on down. Check us out. See our palatial digs. Have a dip in the hot tub.
That's right. You know, and if you want
a cup of coffee.
That's right.
Which will be more likely.
And if you're listening and you want to get more out of your contribution to this community radio station, like Lynn said, come on down, spend some time with us, pitch in, help us produce that news, help us produce some of those public affairs programming. Go with us on some of those mobile broadcast remotes that we do and be part of this. It's a community, it's your community, and we need you to be part of it and join us in this effort right now. That number one more time, 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to the news.
Wells Fargo headquarters in California was met by a rally of homeowners in San Francisco today. The protesters gathered against unfair foreclosures happening around the state. Those foreclosures could cost the state more than $3 billion in lost revenue, according to a new report from a housing rights organization that examines the effects of Wells Fargo's foreclosure policies on distressed homeowners in hard-hit communities. With more on this story, we turn to Max Pringle for Free Speech Radio News.
Homeowners and their supporters gathered at a recent rally at San Francisco's Wells Fargo headquarters to draw attention to the impact of the bank's policies on the state's economy. According to a new report, banks have foreclosed on approximately 1.7 million California homes since 2008, and about 65,000 California homeowners are currently in the foreclosure pipeline, with Wells Fargo leading the way.
Wells Fargo, which is one of the largest servicers in California, have about 11,616 people in their foreclosure pipeline.
That's about 20% of the loans facing foreclosure in California, says Grace Martinez, an organizer with the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, which co-authored California in Crisis, How Wells Fargo's Foreclosure Pipeline is Damaging Local Communities. Martinez says if Wells Fargo does foreclose on that many borrowers, the economic impact would be felt statewide. Each home would lose approximately 22% of its value for a total loss of more than $1 billion. And homes in the surrounding neighborhood would lose value too for an additional loss of about $2.2 billion.
We've got members in Oakland and L.A., all the way down to San Diego and Sacramento, who are impacted by not only Wells Fargo's practices, but also by the refusal to actually provide any type of principal reduction.
According to the report, Wells Fargo's mortgage principal reduction policies are the least generous of the major banks when renegotiating mortgages. For example, Wells Fargo forgives about $74,000 per average principal reduction, while Bank of America writes down nearly $200,000 per average principal reduction. But Wells Fargo disputes the report, saying it has had an aggressive principal reduction policy in place since 2009. The bank declined an interview but released a statement saying that most of the more than $6 billion in principal forgiveness it's given out during the mortgage crisis has gone to California borrowers. It also says its delinquency and foreclosure rates are 4% below the national average. But Peter Fairfield has had a different experience. He and his wife took out a home equity loan 4 years ago to shore up their flagging photography business. They now face foreclosure on the San Francisco home they've been in for the last 34 years.
Wells Fargo sold me a loan that I couldn't afford. They promised that they would refinance it so that we could make the payments, but that never happened.
Fairfield says his family was the victim of predatory lending, and when the rent on their business went up $5,000 overnight, they went to Wells Fargo to find a solution and were met with
false promises, lost paperwork, month after month after month of trustee sales hanging over my head, never knowing what's going on, not getting return phone calls. It's just enough to make you want to head to the bridge. But we're not doing that. We're fighting.
Another San Francisco homeowner, Manuela Alvarez, says she had a similar experience. She took out a home improvement loan with Wells Fargo a few years back. The loan payment skyrocketed after the mortgage meltdown. Her jobs at a hair salon and at nursing homes doing hair for the elderly weren't enough to make the payments, so she rented out part of her home. That got her household income up to about $6,000 per month. But the bank wasn't impressed.
sacrifice my kitchen, my living room, in order to qualify. And they told me that it wasn't enough. In order for me to qualify, I had to make $11,000 a month.
Among other recommendations, the report suggests that Wells Fargo make principal reduction a core, front-end strategy when considering loan modifications, release ethnicity and income data on borrowers facing foreclosure, and put a moratorium on foreclosures until these steps are put into place. Max Pringle, FSRN, San Francisco.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for a third episode of a month-long series through 2013 celebrating KBOO's 45th anniversary at 6 o'clock. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's show will be a conversation on the rampant racism in the UK with guest activist Lee Jasper, also from the United Kingdom. Tomorrow's weather forecast calls for showers and clouds with a high of 62 degrees.
It's 5:29, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Many people buy in bulk. Why purchase toilet paper a four-pack at a time, goes their thinking, when I can make one trip and pick up a year's supply? This stock-up mentality can make sense, up to a point. A year's supply of toilet paper? Check. But 100 years worth? What, are you nuts? Which brings us to the Department of Homeland Security. This conglomeration of airport screeners, border patrol agents, and other armed federal forces is a major purchaser of guns, and guns need bullets. So it's no surprise that DHS would make a bulk bullet buy. But it is somewhere way north of surprising that it purchased 1.6 billion bullets. You might wonder, is that a lot? Well, at the police agency's present use of 15 million rounds a year fired at its training centers and in the course of official duty, 1.6 billion is more than a 100-year supply of ammo. Or think of it this way. At the peak of the Iraq War, our Army was shooting 6 million rounds a month, so DHS is stockpiling enough for a 20-year hot war. Now, let's wonder about this. Why? Homeland Security, as its name states, is a domestic force, so what war is it anticipating? Also, these 1.6 billion bullets are not just little poppers. Forbes magazine notes that they include hollow point rounds that are even outlawed for use in war, as well as, quote, a frightening amount of bullets specialized for snipers. Again, why? DHS says blandly that they get a better price on a big buy. Another theory is they're doing it because they can. Congress will okay any purchase wrapped with a Homeland Security ribbon. And then there's the conspiracy theorists who say that we the people are the target of the buildup. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't buy that, but the question remains, why? Shouldn't someone in Congress be inquiring?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
A day after Governor Rick Snyder's appointed emergency financial manager began the job of exercising unilateral authority over the city of Detroit, the Boggs Center in southeast Michigan has issued a call to establish a community council of organizations to oppose policy geared at undermining the democratic nature of civic power. KBOO's Robin Ryan spoke with university professor and longtime local activist Shay Howell about how the council will be assembled, as well as what brought about the situation the call to action inspired.
Governor Snyder appointed a man named Kevin Orr as something called the Emergency Financial Manager of Detroit. We're calling for the creation of a community council of organizations in response to the emergency manager, who is essentially a one-person authority over the entire city, setting aside the mayor and the city council and all other elected officials.
And this appointment has been described as a usurpation of civic power. Can you clarify how you come to that conclusion?
In the early 90s, Michigan passed a law saying that when any municipal government went into financial trouble, the governor could appoint an emergency manager to resolve the financial difficulty. That's not particularly unusual. 23 states have a similar law. What's unusual about Michigan is it is the only state in the country that says the financial manager takes over all civil authority and can disband all civil government. Further, they can set aside all negotiated contracts. So what we have in Detroit is an elected mayor and an elected city council being set aside so that this one person can address the financial situation, which many of us believe was created by the state itself in withholding money that it owed Detroit.
What attributes and authority do you want to see the community council given?
One of the things that's happened is before the setting aside of our mayor and our council, the Detroit School Board has been under emergency manager, and that too had been set aside. What the school board did is they continued to meet, they continued to provide information for citizens, and they continued to review the decisions being made by the unaccountable manager. So one of the things that we think the council ought to do is become a public body that is responsible for political conversation in the city and for holding the emergency manager accountable. In addition to that, we have a brand new charter that has developed precincts for the first time in almost a half a century in Detroit. And one of the obligations of this council would be to help bring these precincts to life so that we can move democratic processes closer and closer